Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports. Live from Las Vegas. Want to welcome everyone to the show. And great guest tonight, Mr. Dan Fitzgerald was here tonight. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. We're running out of hosts, so you might be here longer than you think. So as long as myself, usually JJ's here, but he's out still. As we said last week, he had to go in the hospital, so... He's recovering, so nothing too serious, we hope, but he's doing better, I guess, since you've seen
him. Hopefully he'll be back
soon. He was bitching a little bit, right, something, so we know he's starting to feel somewhat better.
Yeah. Well, we wish him well, certainly hope he gets back.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, or Dan's going to fill in.
You've just been elected.
I don't know if anyone has time for that.
I understand.
And then, of course, the man always on a mission, Mr. Gary Wyatt.
How you guys doing? Thanks for being here, Dan.
Mm-hmm. And Justin Griffiths has been popping in and out, but you've chased him off too, Gary.
No, he's feeling under the weather too.
Yeah.
Oh. Goodness.
He even refused to go to dinner tonight, so you know he's got to be sick to not eat.
Exactly right. Something's wrong. A young boy that doesn't want to eat, doesn't want to... Yeah. Go out.
Can't say he's growing because he's already 6'2 or 6'3. So
he's not growing yet.
He's a tall gentleman, that's for sure.
Right. So, anyways, we're here. So
that's right.
Got the Lysol. We're spraying everything down.
We're in the Lysol. That's a good point. So where's the?
Don't touch anything.
Hey, they haven't been in here, so we're okay. J.J. or Patrick hasn't been here. So.
You wouldn't think so, but it is the season, even though it's like almost 70 degrees outside, they say, any given day. It's like 68 degrees in December.
Everyone is sick. It's going around quickly. And I'm a teacher, so I'm constantly washing my hands or using Purell or trying to avoid that coughing child. I'll help you from a distance.
Well, yeah, so you've got... you're more vulnerable than the rest of us, I think, being around.
Yeah, maybe I'm tougher. Maybe my immune system beefed up. The cooties that the kids have and beefed up a little bit, worked out.
Immunized by just being around it all the time. Yeah, it is that season. But knock on wood, I've been fortunate enough the last few years. I don't think I've... gotten sick.
Knock on something.
Maybe
knock
as an excuse, I've called in sick, but I have really been sick.
He hasn't been sick.
Been quotation marks. So.
The Monday blues.
The Tuesday blues.
Hey, speaking of the Tuesday blues, we've been on air since, it was like 6 years now, and January is going to be our anniversary these guys. I started in about six-ish years ago. They're the longest running motorsports show that I know of right now, continuously. So we're doing good.
Congratulations.
Gary and guys like yourself, Dan, for coming in and keeping us going. And hopefully you pick up the Purell sponsor for your race car. So we'll
that
get
would
to
be nice. You have a few plugs there.
So. Use enough of it.
Free airtime.
But you have talked to JJ, haven't you?
Yes, I have talked to him. He's doing better. He told me he had a bad day on Saturday that he really couldn't do much, but now he's up. And
I hope we're not infringing on any health laws.
Any JJ right?
He did say it's okay.
HIPAA violation.
HIPAA violation.
He's doing better. I spoke to him for a little while today, and he's doing better. Day by day, and that's all he keeps telling me, is just going to take it day by day.
Well, we can call him.
I don't think you want to hear
him. Okay. Yeah, we might not want to hear what he has to say, but call him. We'll save that
Have a
one.
Delay button.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what we're going to need. seven big one. Delay. But anyway,
you'll just hear silence the whole time.
Yeah.
He'll be talking, but you'll just
every once in a while you hear that.
Yeah.
We'll let off the button once.
Probably at the wrong time. So I guess we all know Jay then. Dan, again, thanks for being here. And it's been last time you were here, at least
several months,
6-7 months ish.
Yeah.
I think so. You were kind of mid-season, I think. You're back to racing. Not
mm-hmm.
Would you say full-time or just kind of?
Not full-time. It seems like it's more like a not a full-time weekend warrior, but an open weekend warrior
but
now.
It's kind of nice that way, right? It's not as stressful as, I guess, sometimes when you put yourself on a strict full schedule, especially
mm-hmm.
in motorsports. You know, everybody knows that
it is nice, and I'm able to float around. I don't have to hit the same track more than once, so I don't get involved in the drama that you get involved week to week. I kind of float in, float out. if there is any drama, it kind of goes away pretty quickly.
Even if they are begging you to come to that particular track, huh?
Yeah, and I don't know. Sometimes my dad always said if they walk into the racetrack, it's because you know you're slow. So I always hate it when someone says, "Hey, come race here." Gosh, I'm a field filler. I don't want to be that.
You can use a car count.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder why I'm invited to all these tracks.
Hey, now I'm looking back. I always thought I was special, but
oh no, you're
now
special.
I know.
Special is a relative.
Exactly, it is relative.
You're special, pal.
Now I know why they invited me. No, that's cool. I mean, is that kind of something that you look forward to? Is hitting the track and then, you know, hitting a whole different track? I mean, you're talking dirt race. If you're just joining us, Dan Fitzgerald, 87racing.com. You can find more information about you there at 87racing.com. But dirt racer modified, IMCA sanctioned,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you race IMCA sanctioned, mostly modified races. But you do hit non-sanctioned events once in a while?
The non-sanctioned one would be pretty much Pahrump. Pahrump doesn't sanction modifieds anymore, so... If I race over there, that would be
the non-sanctioned.
The really only place that I would race that isn't sanctioned. Mm-hmm. Earlier in my racing, I did hit some non-sanctioned stuff or other sanctions because there was some competing series for a while, but pretty much everybody has switched over to IMCA. Pahrump dropped it a few years ago because not a lot of racers race for points and mm-hmm. national points, things like that. So they just kind of went their own way. Still use the same rules, but just don't have the benefits of the sanction.
Do you look for that when you schedule some of your races or all your races, I guess? So
I do. I enjoy racing at Pahrump because I grew up racing there. So I don't want to say I feel obligated to go there because that sounds bad, but I feel like it's necessary
right,
to go there
exactly.
once in a while
yeah,
and
like, yeah,
just
yeah,
touch base and huh. see people and I have people who enjoy watching me race there still, and so it's nice to go. But I do enjoy the benefits of the sanction. You know, there's certain things that are just guaranteed. There's the insurance to and from the racetrack. There's the secondary insurance. There's a lot of things going on right now with motorsports that if you're involved in an accident at the racetrack, that your own personal insurance can refuse some of that because of
right.
the way things are. And so it's just nice to know. Granted, we're not guaranteed anything when we go, but
sure.
it's just nice to have a set of rules and a consistent baseline to go to and just kind of know what to expect when you go.
Well, I mean, not put a damper on racing or anything like that, but when we go into racing and go into any track, we take on a responsibility ourselves, knowing the dangers of racing. It could be fatal, you
it
know
really can
absolutely.
Be
so.
And we all know that as racers, we definitely don't think about that, because if you thought about it, you probably wouldn't you wouldn't do it as well. And I think the onus on that is more on our families and friends,
sure.
because they know it, but they know that's what we want to do. So,
right.
And the sad thing is, if something drastic does happen, you're not going to have to deal with the consequences. All of them are.
Right.
So, it's something I think about a little bit more as I've gotten older.
Sure.
You know, when you're younger, you're probably a little selfish
more,
and don't really think.
More resilient too. Your body gets a little more.
Think, but, you know, unfortunately it's happened and we've seen incidents.
Sure.
They're more publicized than what they used to be. I have people that I work with that say, "Oh, I'm so worried when you race. I'm not sure if you're going to make it back on Monday." And
I don't want to be your teacher aid.
I'm in more danger driving to school every day than I am in that race car.
Exactly.
I mean, I know that the risks, but I also know that when I pull up to a bumper or to a stoplight and there's a bumper staring in my window next to me,
right.
If I'm in the wrong spot, that bumper's going through my head. There's
right.
nothing stopping that. So.
Well, and that's one thing on the track, off the track differences are when you're on the track, the safety equipment you have, obviously, it gets better every year with technology. So the older we get, the safer we get also, you know,
right.
the technology gets better. Even with the dumbest driver on the racetracks that we've seen, we're still probably safer with them in our safety equipment on the track. And sometimes it feels like you said, just driving to work or something.
We really are. I mean, we're much safer today than we were even 10 years ago. And that's something I've had a hard time adjusting to is the new safety equipment in the car. It's cumbersome. And I feel, of course, you're supposed to feel strapped in and
right.
locked
secure.
In. But
right.
I feel very locked in. I used to, I felt like I had a lot more room and a lot more head movement before, and now it just seems like I'm really rigid in the car, and it was tough for me to get used to because I just felt like I was locked in as opposed to being a little bit more free when the safety equipment wasn't so rigid.
So does IMCA require like a Hans type device, or they just like a neck, regular like a foam neck brace?
I believe the neck brace is still required, and the Hans device or the neck and safety equipment is recommended. That might have changed. I didn't look at the new updated rules,
but
you would see
your last race it wasn't required to have a Hans device.
I don't remember it being required, but I would say few people don't.
Well, really?
I mean,
on dirt, because obviously you see a lot more Hans devices on asphalt. I don't know a lot about dirt, but on asphalt, it seems like you see a lot more younger drivers, and maybe that's why you see more Hans-type devices on asphalt racing versus dirt racing. But obviously, I could be wrong. I'm just kind of throwing a comparison out there.
But it's changed quite a bit in dirt. Most people get out with some sort of Hans
never
device.
Thought about
there's several different versions, but... Mm-hmm. Essentially, they're all, if you say Hans device, it's pretty much the same concept.
Sure. Yeah, keeping your head movement to limited movement in obviously in a crash.
Right. Trying to protect that part.
But it does bring up another issue, like you said, is head movement. You're limiting head movement, but you're also limiting view, you know, your ability to look and see who's around you. Now, the IMCA modifieds don't allow mirrors, do they?
No mirrors.
At all.
In fact, I've never raced with a mirror that I used. I was...
Do you think you'd be lost? Like, somebody threw mirrors in your car, you'd be like, what the heck's going on? Are you looking too many places?
I actually raced the pavement in 2001, and I didn't have a spotter, and I knew that if I bought radios, my dad would want to talk to me, and we just didn't get along, and I knew I would just end up turning it off. So they said I needed some sort of thing for them to feel safe, so they forced me to put a mirror in.
Wow.
So I would put the mirror in, and then when I would drive on the racetrack, I would move it so that it faced the roof that I couldn't see it.
You didn't have to look at it.
I unfortunately did that one time in lineup, and they came through to check my mirror and saw that it wasn't where I could see. So
well, how did that happen?
They would stop me on track entrance to make sure it was okay.
Funny.
And then I would go around the racetrack and turn it back up.
Danny Fitzgerald causing trouble?
I was causing lots of
trouble. Your arm bumps the mirror sometimes way up there.
The mirror to me can be so mesmerizing.
Sure.
You can spend a lot of time racing behind you instead of in front of you. And I was always taught to race in front of me.
Right.
And, you know, being raised on the dirt, it was, if somebody had position on you, you knew they had position. And
right.
if they didn't have position on you, then it was their responsibility to back out.
Sure.
Granted, that doesn't happen.
Never.
You know, people still run into each other. But it was just my comfort level at that time. I had never raced with a mirror. I never raced with a spotter ever. And it bothered me to have the mirror in the car. It bothered me to glance up and see, oh, there's somebody right behind me.
Right.
Whereas I could always feel that or hear that pressure, but to have that visual of,
sure.
dang, that car is right there, was a little too much for me. So I just kind of put the mirror up. So
I can understand that. Like, that could be a misconception because the what you're seeing in the mirror isn't necessarily the distance that you're figuring in your head that they really are, you know, they're probably closer than you think or something like that.
Right.
So I can see you, not you in particular, but anybody making a decision off of glancing at a mirror when, if you didn't have it, you'd probably be a better racer. Just, hey, you know, you react and hope that the experienced driver you're racing with reacts along, you know, kind of along the same lines that you react at.
Right.
So.
It just made me a little more aware of what was going on around me. I can hear things a lot more clearly. I can kind of tell by where right. noise is coming from, where somebody is. And so it just kind of almost gave you a sixth sense about
right.
where people were. But I understand the concept of mirrors, and I totally get that, and I see where it comes from. But my personal experience was no mirrors
right.
ever. And then they threw one in and expect me to, I was having a hard enough time adjusting to the pavement because my car felt so tight on the pavement. I just wanted to throw it in there and it just feels tight.
Right.
It's supposed to feel tight, but you know, so throwing that mirror in just threw me for a loop. So I did what I could to get rid of it.
Hey, it was still there, but you know,
I never threw it out the window.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
Never threw a caution.
It's funny. My first time in a modified, it was one I bought off of Mark Allison,
mm-hmm.
One of his first ones. And they were racing out on asphalt because I never raced dirt on with a modified, but out at LVMS at the Bullring. And I put a mirror in, stuff like that, and we're practicing stuff. There's other cars out there and all that. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking at my mirror. I'm probably mirror driving, so it's slowing me down, making me all weird. But then Dan, I don't know if you know Dan Geiger, mm-hmm. he was Mark. Well, he comes up, he goes, Mike. I was like, yeah. He goes, you drive like crap. I was like, oh, okay. Hey, first of all, I got an excuse.
I've never
been modified, but thanks for being honest. Yeah, but yeah, you can take the smile off my face because I've never been, you know, I
right.
never raced one of those before, but I don't know if I've gotten any better, but hopefully I haven't gotten any worse. But it was nice to hear that. And then, you know, I thought about the mirror and what I, you know, was conscious of what I was doing. And
got right to the point on that
yeah.
one.
And he didn't look like a crap. He said, SHI, yeah, but,
he said
but still. But, you know, it was a good lesson. I was glad to hear it, even though it was criticism.
Oh.
Some of us don't like hearing criticism.
All I got to say is if it was Dan who was criticized.
But, you know, he had
words.
Constructive criticism. You know, he did it for a reason, and it made sense.
To him.
But anyway, that's my story. But
made you think about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The mirror thing made me think about that and all that. But so Gary, he fights to have a mirror
that's
in his
right,
car.
That's right. Right.
But
see, as you said, you don't like the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I came off of the pavement and go into the dirt, and I can't drive a car without a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when I feel like I'm getting passed in a corner, am I mirror driving? No, I, mm-hmm. you know, but when I go through a corner and I'm going to pass someone, I like to glance up and see if I can go towards the wall.
Right.
For my safety, I can't race a car without a mirror. But I've came off the pavement as well. I've been on the pavement.
And I think it's because you started driving with one, so that was part of your process.
Right.
So I think that's understandable.
Am I mirror driving? No. I just like to know where if I got to move to the second groove or the third groove, I just like to know if there's a car there that I can clear or get that.
Do you have a side mirror also?
Nope,
just the one mirror.
And okay. I have it facing like the right rear corner of the car.
Kind of see it wide.
So if I glance up, I know if I cleared that car or if there's a car there, I know, you know, if he's passing me on the outside, I know I can't go up.
Right.
For me, it's a safety thing. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I'm talking about me personally.
Right.
But on the other hand, you say you can't race with one. Mm-hmm. I can't. If they take my mirror out, I don't feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, and as they all say, if you're not comfortable in that car, you ain't going anywhere.
You're not.
But for me personally, it's a safety thing for me, you know.
And I can understand that. I learned real early without a mirror that I don't make any abrupt moves. Everything I make is a gradual move until I'm clear. So if I'm trying to move to the outside, I'm not darting to the outside. Whereas a mirror allows you to make that abrupt move because you know that you're clear.
Right.
A spotter allows you to make a really abrupt move because you know you're clear. My moves are gradual. You will not see me slam left, slam right to take a position. I will move my way up, and then if I feel a little bit of resistance, then I say, oh, I guess I'm not serious. but I don't make abrupt moves because I learned real early you make an abrupt move and you weren't clear, you're fenced pretty quickly.
Right, right,
and
right.
So I totally understand the difference of, you know, you running a mirror to begin, that's part of your process inside the car. It's not a part of my process in the car, and it's a distraction for me. Yeah. Just like somebody talking in my ear would be an incredible distraction. Even the receiver was an adjustment for me, because if you have someone on the receiver that talks at a different time that you're used to, or in a different level than you're used to, or gets excited, it startles you a little bit because you're racing. You're not expecting to
hear somebody talking
or yelling, you know, like I've experienced at some racetracks.
Absolutely.
Fire, stop your car. And, you know, you're just freaking
panic
out
mode,
because
right?
you don't know if you're on fire.
Yeah.
But so that was an adjustment for me. And some of that's just because of the era I grew up racing in. You know, I started a long time ago. Things were much different. Technology was not like it is now. The only thing is the dirt has not gone to the mirrors. In the modifieds, the stock cars, the hobby, like the IMCA sanction.
Even the hobby.
Does not have
mirrors. Because I was going to bring that up. Maybe that's part of the difference is, you know, you're, Gary, driving a stock car, you know, Bomber stock, and you're driving a open modified where you don't have windows. You don't have the isolation like a stock car has as much. I mean, you still have some, you know, openness in a stock car, but with the modifieds, you have louder mufflers typically. Mm-hmm. So you can hear, like you're saying, you can kind of ease your way out and you can hear tone differences in somebody lifting. Mm-hmm. So somebody may or may not be there where you might not get the same thing in a stock type class, you know, so mirror might be, you know,
and like you're talking sound difference. As for me, I run mufflers on my car and you can hardly hear my car, but the next car might be open
or might be running a muffler either way.
Right.
So.
And you could hear that car coming, but you know, I lost a race because I saw the third place car and didn't see the second place car. And I said, well, I'll let up a little bit, you know, and on the white flag lap, there goes the second place car.
Oh no.
Right by me in turn two. I nobody's fault but my own, but
was
I
it a teammate?
Nope.
Oh, that's
I thought it was the third place car. I thought was the second place car. And I was a half a track ahead of him. So I said, well, I'll wait up. And the white flag came up, you know, and I was like, okay. And there goes the second place car. So if anybody says I'm here driving there, you know, I lost a race because I saw the third place car, not the second place car.
So. Right.
No, but anyways, I thought I, you know, but I didn't know, realize that IMCA, like their hobby stock type divisions, didn't allow mirrors either. So.
Yeah, there's no mirrors throughout the.
Have you noticed over the time of the modifieds, like he's saying, he runs a muffler. Have they really been more strict on their dB rules, like sound? Like, I don't know what it is now. Do they require more mufflers today than they used to when you first started?
California has always required. Something. Some places are a lot more stringent than others. You go to Watsonville and they will black flag you
really
on the racetrack for being too loud make you change it or load it up and go home. And they have really strict mufflers, which IMCA has to make an exception for because IMCA has a spec muffler and it's only good to so many decibels, I think 95.
Right.
Some of these places are 90, so they have to have special mufflers to run. The Fairgrounds racetrack that I race at in Delta, Utah has a kind of just a friendly neighbor agreement with everybody to run mufflers on their cars. So we run mufflers when we go there. But otherwise, most of the regular places, the Midwest, all that, they really don't have that whole muffler issue.
The reason I bring that up is you know, you bring it talking about like the receiver and stuff, you know, with the mufflers kind of quieting down. I noticed that on like a lot of asphalt divisions, even like the Lucas Oil modifieds when they run, they're quieter than the SRL Spears late models, you know. And then it brings up a point like when you hear, let's say when you're required to work to have a receiver or something, you have somebody yelling in there, hey, hey, all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm awake now.
It is.
But it's nice to hear like, you know, like yourself that's more calm and, you know, you just get on when you need to, you know, it helps, I think, keep races moving along without jarring anybody.
Right. And it is nice to have them. Everybody has their own preference, though. Some people would rather just not have to listen to it. Some people would rather have somebody in their ear
ultimately
the entire race.
Well, no, and that's true. Like spotters that, you know, some want, you know, hey, keep giving me info. I want to know. And
it's funny because they show that spotter. You have the spotter thing on the NASCAR races at Talladega or Daytona when the spotters and they listen in on the spotter and hi, looking high, still there. And I just, that would drive me insane. I would turn that radio off. There's just the constant noise. There's times when I just want people to stop talking. I don't know if it's a teaching thing or what, but I just feel like saying, stop talking for 30 seconds.
If you're a NASCAR, be like, we believe Dan Fitzgerald's having radio communication issues again this race.
He meltdown and exploded.
Exactly. What's that black radio flying out of the window? The strap must have broke.
His engine didn't blow up. It must have been his head.
No, that's true. You know, we've had a couple people in here in the past where, you know, they've liked, you know, just doing their own thing and, you know, just not being told what to do, I guess. I mean, especially in the IMCA modified, they don't allow spotters in that at all, so it's all up to the driver to
It's just the receiver that's and that's the newest thing that
has that been a requirement at most or all tracks now that you've been to?
I would say most. The one that kind of is lagging behind on that is actually Mojave Valley.
Oh, that's
funny. They tried the receiver a couple times. I don't know. I don't race it regularly, so when most of the tracks had already gone to it, they still weren't using it, but I'm sure they're probably using it now. It's just a good thing to get the show going. You don't have to wait for the cars to go a lap to switch these two guys and then realize, oh, wait, the wrong two guys switched. So now we have to wait another lap for them to come around next to the track worker so he can give the next two guys a signal. You can tell them over the radio and get, you know.
It's like the days of technology are here. Back in the day, you kind of kept the track of where your own position was, and then the flagman, if he was waving something to you, kind of had an idea what where you should be. Nowadays, I think everybody is so
ignores it.
Cell phones and everything. Yeah. they want their GPS to tell them where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, they need it on their dashboard.
Right.
P3. But I noticed that because I worked the Duoma Desert this year. And,
no, did you really?
So
cool.
I was scoring for that event. And
well, we're going to have to hear about that.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. So.
But no, that, and that's true. Like the race receivers, you know, I know on asphalt is probably at every track that has asphalt, it just dirt doesn't seem like it's there yet completely.
And you had not the best, but one of the best in the business of announcing with you up there.
Definitely. It was a professional crew all the way across. Track prep with Toby Cruz and his group. And
yeah, we heard some good things about
Tim
that.
Was running lineup for
wow.
Everything down there in the pits. And Misty was running the scoreboard. She's the only one trained to run that scoreboard. And Tim
don't look like they're getting rid of her.
Yeah,
time, so.
Tim, myself, and Misty were the only ones trained to score.
Is it because
on
she don't
system.
Take shit from anybody, or no?
She doesn't do that either. She's actually
yeah.
after me and Tim all the time about being a little tougher.
Cool.
But she's the only one that trained to do the scoreboard. Tim, myself, and Misty are the only ones trained to score on the transponder system. So
nice.
When she got pinned to do the scoreboard, then Tim got pinned to do lineup. That left me as the odd guy out to do scoring.
Was it the first time at an event like this?
It was the first time at a really big event. And I was intimidated because while I've transitioned over to the tower side and the operation side, I score at the bowling, I score practice. I do the transponder stuff for practice and for qualifying. And then when that's over with, I make the lineups and do all those things with the inverts and all that happens.
Nice.
And then by the time that's faxed down and over with, then Misty is up from the tire barn and she scores the features. Tim scores the features on Friday night because Inex runs Friday night races.
Yeah.
And I've scored some Lucas Oil races and I've scored with the SRL, but you know, I've had people there with me
right.
doing things and helping me. So this was the first one where it was just kind of me and,
wow.
and it was the first time ever using transponders at this event.
Wow.
And
a lot of,
so
food.
It was a,
yeah.
and I know what, like you mentioned, Chet,
yeah.
true professional, Toby
Absolutely.
Cruz, true professional,
yeah.
that flagman, Grant Oskvig from Iowa, true professional. These are people who are masters of their craft. And here I am in the tower thinking, I hope that this goes well. And, you know, fortunately it was very smooth. We were able to get lineups done really quickly, get
full,
shows moving.
You did
and
the full event from start to the
from start
day.
To finish,
wow.
from packing till
nice.
It was over with. So it was actually, it was a nice relief when it was over.
Yeah.
Very good experience. Because I, you know, at some point do want to transition into that as a career.
Is there
path.
Anything that stood out that you thought, well, maybe I should do this different, or, you know, I caught flack on this, I'm not doing that again?
No, it was just, there's so much that goes into an event that you don't, I guess as a racer, you don't take a moment to think of all the small little details that happen. I mean, at the very beginning, before the event started, there were however many 200 modifieds and
wow.
60 sport mods. All of that information needed to be input into the timing system. So you needed
wow.
names and car numbers and transponder numbers. So it was a lot of data entry. Fortunately, with school, I'm fairly proficient at
That's cool.
the computer. So I was able to finagle a spreadsheet and import that into the system, so it got all the names and everything in, so saved me hours of
you
typing.
You might know a little bit about math, I guess, too, right?
Just a
little.
Just a touch. And,
that helps.
Yeah, so I was able to get that in, which saved us a ton of time.
Wow.
And then Misty was able to be sick during the morning to get the transponders assigned and all
cool.
that stuff. And then I rushed right after school and made it there in time to get it all. The toughest part was just that packing and practice part, that first day, trying to make sure that you have names spelled correctly, transponders got assigned later, or people had their own and they couldn't read the numbers off of them. So you had to wait for them to come out and try and get that all done. And so it was stressful because
200 plus cars ended up with transponders somehow.
Yeah, almost 300.
Almost
300.
Almost 300. Really? That many?
And the surprising thing is most of them had their own. There really wasn't a lot of rental transponders.
No,
so most of them had their own. And with a system like that, it's nice because you could store them. So, you know, if you do it again next year, if they have the same transponder.
You have the information.
But my experience is people don't have the same transponder.
Like, what, you're not so-and-so?
Yeah,
I sold it. You know.
Funny thing is drivers think the transponder system knows all of that. So they come in and say, hey, it says I'm so-and-so and I'm not so-and-so. Okay, well, you have the transponder that you said was so-and-so last time. I know. Well, we changed drivers this week. Well, the transponder doesn't do a DNA fingerprint test. It doesn't know who you
are. But good invention idea, by the way. fingerprint on the transponder.
Recognition software. And there's would be nice. But it taught me a lot about this show. And I mean, just creating lineups so that the people in lineup could read the lineup. So creating bigger font. And so one race is over and I'm printing a finish, sending the finish via email to IMCA's office back in Iowa and creating the inside row of the first B feature for that night so that we could go on. So
it sounds like it all came together though at the end. And
it was a busy night, but it was fun. Busy few nights anyway.
Did time go by pretty quick? You're like, hey man, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's time to go home.
Well, the good news is we never made it till 2 a.m. I think it was early each night. I think it was like 10, 11 o'clock.
Wow.
That was out each time. So it was really good.
I know in the past, I didn't go this last year, but I don't know if it was last year or the year before, I was out there and I was like, man, there's a lot of B, C, D, whatever features.
Right.
There's a lot counting up to the main events, and it just went on, you know, pretty late in the night.
The first two nights, there were 39 races.
Wow.
Yeah, so between heats, B features, and A qualifiers, and that's just two classes, so that's a lot of races.
You see a lot more B mods now, too, I guess. Obviously, every year they probably keep growing with their different packages that IMCA has adapted to, I guess, with the crate motors.
Right, and the sport mod motor is the motor that the Bullring modified will run
next year.
So the 602 crate.
Now, the IMCA, I always see them called the North. Was it the North?
They have the Northern, and then they also have the Southern.
Oh, really?
The Northern is probably the more predominant.
Yeah, I always see that even when they race kind of in the general area like Nevada and stuff like that, they always say it's the North, you know.
Right. And there's tire differences between the two. The Northern Sport Mod was IMCA's version of the Sport Mod that first came out. They had already had a Sport Mod division in Texas, primarily Texas, Oklahoma, I guess, that was called the Southern Sport Mod. And it was different enough to where they couldn't just convert everything over to the Northern Sport Mod. And somewhere or another, IMCA ended up kind of pulling them in and adopting them as a Southern Sport Mod. Several years ago at the Duel in the Desert, they had a Duel in the Desert with Southern and Northerns mixed, but it wasn't well received. So they ended up just going Northern. And then the Southerns were invited to Super Nationals a couple of years ago for one night to run a separate Southern show. But I don't think that happened this year. I think Northern Sport Mods are definitely more predominant in the Midwest. Out here, some of the Utah tracks and Colorado had that Southern feel where some of those cars kind of migrated up. But I think a lot of tracks are switching over to Northern.
Yeah, I think that's what ultimately you probably end up seeing is just whatever the sport mounts are going to be the northern.
Yeah, they're still both sanctioned. Yeah,
right.
Still both sanctioned, but northern is the primary division for
which
sport
is good. You know, you brought up, you know, at the Bullring next year, if you don't, you know, we can talk about that. The modifieds are changing the way things are done, which is good. You know, and kudos to Tim out at LVMS at the Bullring. You go to LVMS.com, by the way, check out the Bullring link and find out more information there. But, you know, he's kept bought the modifieds back, for first of all, and adapted to try to bring in like the this area's most predominant division, which was the Lucas Oil modifieds. And guys, you know, great guys like Petrie and all them guys to bring as many cars out as possible. And the other guys, you know, don't want to leave anybody out, but to keep coming year after year. But the division hadn't really grown, and something had to be done to open it up and allow, I guess, cost to not kind of overtake the division. And I love the modified, the Lucas Oil modified. Everybody does. They're always a big division when they come to town, but they have gotten expensive. You got seasoned racers like Mark Allison going into that division and racing and finding out, hey, there's going in knowing there's talent in there, but there's also a lot of money in there too, in these motors and the shock packages and all that. So it's tough to compete in that type of division, and try to bring guys to a local track is tough.
Right.
So it was good Tim bought in, you know, put it out there and bought in a bunch of guys to let them kind of decide, hey, you know, throw me some ideas.
Right.
Tell me what you guys want to do. And, you know, and then obviously some of that came back with, you know, what, sorry about that. The crate motor deal, you know.
And I know there were several crate motors delivered to the dual desert for some of the modified guys, because Carl Chevrolet is one of them. And
he actually had a great deal on, I think, was it like $2,800 or something, 38, I don't know. It was like a crazy deal.
Yeah, it was nice. And I'm trying not to speak out of turn, because I'm not involved in that process at all. And I know that there's talk of some transition of people who have built motors and all of that going on. So I'm sure there'll be testing and all that goes on. But the premise is for them to hopefully go to the 602 crate motor and make the class a little more inexpensive. I did have a conversation with Mark Allison, because I went down and helped him in Havasu right before or right after Thanksgiving, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark was talking about just how expensive everything was. He said it's a great series. You get towing money and everything's organized and all that. But he said, you're going to spend some money if you want to run the series, because it's 2 days every time. You buy a set of tires each night, and it's
and he's got good equipment, and he's got the experience behind him, and it's still, you know, even though he was a rookie last year. My first W is a rookie in ages.
I don't know how that works, but rookie by rule, I guess. There's nothing rookie about Mark.
I think he got second, didn't he, in rookie status? But anyways.
I totally understand the process. I was giving him a hard time. There's nothing rookie about Mark.
Not at all. But, yeah, you know, and it is a tough division to, you know, excel in today's modified. So, and a lot of local tracks, you know, have modifieds out there that are maybe a little bit older or something like that, that could still be competitive. And here's an option, you know, here at LVMS at the Bullring to run, you know, an older chassis. Like I have an old left-hander asphalt chassis.
Right.
That'd be ideal for something like that. So.
Yeah. And I can speak for the 604 crate, which is what I have, which is one step more. It's got the aluminum heads and all, but there's absolutely no horsepower. So I can imagine that it wouldn't be as much suspension-wise to try and hook one of those cars up, because the motor's not as powerful as probably what they have in Lucas Oil modified.
Well, and that kind of puts the cars maybe at a little more equal playing field, especially like everybody talks about Vegas being a horsepower track, and here you're throwing out some modifieds without horsepower.
Right.
So I think you're going to see a lot of close racing. and you know, it should be good. Should
yeah.
be fun to see.
It's good for the fans. It's tough on a race director. Closer they are, the worse it is.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, that's part of the fun, right? Having close racing.
It is.
You want it, but it's a
double-edged sword.
Yeah, double-edged sword. Absolutely. But hey, I'm looking forward to it. The 2018 race season, you know, never can come fast enough. The next year, I know.
No,
these days are grim for Gary when there's no racing going on for him. So what are your plans coming up? I mean, plan on racing obviously this next year. Or, you know, I don't know if there's races even coming up in the next month or two here.
I believe there is a month in December, or there is a race in the month of December. Right now I have my car being worked on at Jerry's in Pahrump. He's going over just some welds that I see are a little iffy, and car's 5 years old and need a new body on it because it's looking a little haggard, and change of valve springs on the crate motor. You have to change them every 12 to 15 races, and should have that done hopefully by the holidays so that I can kind of work on getting vinyl done for that. And trying to decide on the vinyl scheme is probably going to be the hardest part of the season.
Right.
I have an idea, but it'll be different for everybody. They'll see a different look out of my car, that's for sure. But
sometimes that feel, you know, is something you need to change.
Yeah, it's something from my childhood that should be fun. Should be fun. So, yeah, and there's some racing in Phoenix. There's an Arizona Modified Tour that runs, I think, 10 consecutive days between Yuma and Canyon Arizona Speedway. With my teaching schedule, that's really not an option for me anymore. But I could see myself hitting a Saturday show or something there and doing that. And then really just want to look and see if I can get somewhere else. I've never raced in Idaho. I've never raced in...
Well, let's recap every single race that you raced in. What was number one?
No, I don't.
Because you got over.
You would lose your audience quicker than you did when
over
I signed
off. Over 700 plus, it's cool. I don't know how many other people out there really have as close of a count as you do, but I'm assuming
they're probably more sane than I am. They probably have more of a life than I did growing up.
See, let's count this.
But there's just some places I'd like to go.
And you've hit every single dirt track in Nevada.
I have. I'm trying to think. I have hit every dirt track. I haven't won every dirt track in Nevada. That kind of bothers me.
There you go. You still got
the one that I didn't win at has closed, so that's not going to happen. But I joke about it, but I really don't think about any of that kind of stuff anymore. I try just to go and have a good time. I know that the glory days are behind me, and I just need to make the best out of what's left. I renewed my license with IMCA last week and thought about it. And I've been IMCA licensed half my life. That's really a long time.
And they haven't really raised the prices too much over that time frame, have they?
No, it's been right around I think it's $115 right now.
Okay.
But it's been pretty well close to that for a long time.
That's
so it hasn't been anything drastic. And, I just really want to find somewhere different, find a different place to go. Idaho is definitely the one place I haven't been to. It's just so far.
By the time you take the drive up, you know, you make a vacation out of it, a trip out.
Yeah, I don't know. I get car sick, so pretty much
driving?
No, I have to drive, otherwise I'm car sick. So
that's funny.
All the miles are pretty
all
well
you.
Close to mine.
Wow.
Not all of them.
Most.
Big majority because...
Wait. I remember reading on your website one day, okay, I finished third. Now for our 13-hour drive home.
That makes sense. Yeah, I.
We don't want to get the hotel. That he wants to get.
Yeah, I would rather go home. I've stayed in some shady places throughout the years where
you must have a hell of a pillow at home that you need to get to.
I would rather sleep under the truck than I would have at some of these places.
Oh,
I've been. There was one at Casa Grande where the room half the carpet was missing. There were
because they had to roll somebody up.
Pennies melted to the top of the TV.
Yeah,
you can
money.
Only imagine what went on in that room. And thinking about laying down on that bed was definitely not something I was interested in.
That's probably what he said. Okay, we're going to take the 13-hour drive home tonight.
Yeah, we're going to tag team this and get home.
Well, that's part of the fun of touring, and I guess that's where you know, IMCA has really excelled. Is you can show up to any track and be as competitive anywhere you go because the package is the same.
And it's really changed over the last several years to a more national thing where you will see guys from Iowa and Nebraska and Kansas out here for the winter, wow, racing all these events out here, heading back to the Midwest for a little bit, then heading to North Dakota because they have a week-long series in North Dakota that goes over into Canada for one stop.
Wow.
Then they go down to Batesville, Arkansas for a really big race, and then they come back out here for the Duel in the Desert. So there are people who put in the miles and end up in the different states. I don't have any idea how they do that.
Right.
Because I couldn't even drive my Subaru all those things and still have money left over, so let alone to a race car. But hats off to them. If I could do it, I would certainly be right behind them in line down the highway, that's for sure. So
do some of these tracks, do you look into, like, if they offer tow money or anything, or you just, or any at their purse at all, or you just decide, hey, this is the kind of a track I want to race at, and that's where I'm going?
It's probably the second part of that. Just somewhere I'd want to go and
see
what it's like and race. I've always enjoyed just the little hole in the wall types of racetracks, the down home country type racetracks. And I just always thought that those were some of the Northern Nevada tracks are just some of the coolest little places to go, just because they have that small town feel and just simple, not in a disrespectful way, but just simple race, people who like to race and go race.
And that's
why
they're there.
Really
what
they want to do.
Yeah.
And I've never really been one to chase purse money because I never really look at myself as, oh, I'm going to go win that $2,000 to win race. I just wanted to go race, so I would find a place, hook up, and head there.
Cool. That's always.
And no one offers tow money.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think I got tow money one time. I towed all the way to Beatrice, Nebraska to race, and I think I got tow money there. But I earned that. That was a long way.
No,
Nebraska was a long way from home.
Oh, man. That's cool. This whole past year you've run the 604 crate motor. This is the first year you've, because you used to run a.
I had an open motor, but I've had the crate motor for as long as I've had this car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was an issue with the crate, and I had to put an open motor back in for just a short period of time.
Okay,
but the crate's been, it's one of those things when we were talking about mirrors earlier. How I was raised on the mirror, I was also raised on an open motor, and
right.
I hate racing with a crate motor. I just really don't enjoy it at all.
Are you adapting?
I have to because it just seems like people are not winning with open motors. And
really?
While I don't consider myself a threat to win every week, I don't want to go knowing you're not going to win.
Is it because of consistency, or why do you think?
There's a few things. It certainly has taken away some of the whole horsepower part, trying to get those tires stuck to the ground. But you also have just a higher caliber of racer anymore. The field is much thicker than it used to be. And I just think that the crate is where everyone is and where all the focus has gone. And so that's what everybody's running and that's what everybody's doing. And the cars are so much closer now. you can run your guts out and still stay 10th the whole race.
Wow.
When you feel like you run a good race. Whereas with the open motor, we were so different in speed. You could really mess up.
Wow.
And be a second and a half slower one lap than the next. And you could see a guy make up a whole straightaway in a lap or a set of turns in a lap. Whereas with the crate, you don't really see that difference in speed like you used to, because you could really overdrive a car with the open motor, whereas crate motors, I don't think you can overdrive it quite as much as you
sure.
used to be able to.
I can see that maybe kind of having that much of a mix, adding an extra, I guess, surprise factor when, like, let's say in the old day with an open motor, you know, everybody was running it and you had nobody on your left side of you, you know, have mirrors or anything, and you look over, nobody's there. But at any time, you can hear a guy, he might pop his nose in there and be there just
right,
you know, in seconds flat. Where if it's a crate, yeah, it might take him a couple laps.
Crashable.
Yeah,
and there's still a difference in speed. I mean, there's still fast cars and still slow
sure.
cars, but I just think there was a more drastic difference when the cars had open motors, and I think it was more of a challenge to.
Well, obviously the mix works.
Up.
IMCA, as big as they are all across America, probably one of the oldest sanctioning associations
yeah,
around.
I think it is the oldest.
Yeah,
I think it is
over 100 years old or something like that. But and we only got like a couple minutes left. You got some sponsors, some things you want to kind of hit on.
Isley Motorsports been with me forever, and Jerry Busick and Perump. Now has a new shop, 24/7, the custom shop.
Okay.
So my car looked kind of funny in there with all the street rods and all the old cars that he's restoring.
What
so
is that?
Yeah, my car definitely does not look as clean as those things. So I had to apologize for that. But I'm sure he'll
That's
be kicking
funny.
My car out of there pretty soon and back to the garage, the two-car garage that barely fits one. So.
And if anybody wants to keep up to date with you, they can go to 87racing.com.
Yeah,
and,
it's not very well updated anymore.
But somewhat up
yeah.
to date, right? I mean,
you can email me if you
have. Well, and it has your email on
it
there.
Does,
and,
it does.
I don't know if you have Facebook, a link to Facebook or anything like that on there also.
Yeah, the good old social media stuff. Good old
all
social media.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But cool. Yeah, and you don't know your next race coming up, but you know... coming in fairly soon, I would
yep.
hope.
And I know I'll be working soon once the bell ring starts back up.
That's coming up.
I'll
of
be,
course, you can go to LVMS.com. They did put out a tentative schedule, but not anything kind of
right.
solid
There's
yet.
no classes on
yep.
that yet
and
that I saw.
And I seen you were going to try to get that race in prompt,
Storm and Mormon race.
Storm and Mormon race,
right.
Yes.
I'm not sure what my role will be in at that race. I might... work it, I might race it, I don't know. So I worked it last year.
Mic you up while you're in the car and you can do both.
Like I said, nobody wants to hear that.
You know, Danny say, what did you
ever
heard him say?
We never thought Danny would say that.
As I've gotten older, I talk to myself in the car a lot more. I talk to myself a lot.
See, that'd be
an
interesting conversation.
No, it would not be good. I would have to crawl under a rock.
Well, that's cool. I'm looking forward to the new scheme that you're coming out with. It should be interesting. Hopefully you'll update your website at that time and put the new look.
Yep, yeah. Hopefully I can find some motivation to get that done.
You take care of all that yourself.
I do, and I used to be a lot better at it. But I used to also be a lot more active and a lot more.
You have Christmas vacation coming up. I know that. If you're sure you got some time coming up.
Yeah, I used to be a lot more popular. They were more interested. Now I don't think they're so much interested. There's cooler people. Cooler people.
Cooler people than Dan.
Much cooler.
You're cool in our book. And again, we appreciate you being here. We're out of time again, as usual. We go on and on. Thank you for being here. Don't wait so long next time.
All right.
In what, 6 months or so?
Get well soon there, JJ.
Yeah.
Need to rest.
Exactly.
They're trying to plant me into the seat over
there's
there.
There's two things they want you to do. Demolition derby and...
We almost went the whole hour.
I had to bring it up.
Oh.
We talked about it off air at some point.
I have one in the back.
Double B.
Anyways, hey, we'll see you guys here live on the YouTube. time at onwheelsnow.com. We have got a lot of people on next week. Join us.
Merry Christmas. Thanks for coming in, Jeff.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening.